And welcome to a special extended Christmas edition of Little Atoms with me, Neil Denny. This show consists of a number of interviews recorded before, during and after Nine Lessons and Carols for Godless People, a night of scientific and secular variety curated by the comedian Robin Ince, along with the Rationalist Association and New Humanist magazine, which took place on the night of the 18th of December at the Bloomsbury Theatre. A night which has been described as a variety version of the Royal Institute Christmas Lectures. The show begins with an extended interview with Robin Ince, which is followed by shorter chats with some of the performers. These being the science writer Simon Singh, musician Darren Heyman, and the comedians Christina Martin, Wayne Shepherd, Natalie Haynes, Chris Addison, Tim Minchin, and Josie Long. I'd like to thank the School of Life in Bloomsbury for hosting the interview with Robin Ince in the afternoon. Little Atoms will be back in the new year, so have a great secular and rationalist Christmas, and I hope you enjoy the show. Well, I'm talking to Robin Ince, and we're going to be talking about the various nights of 8 or 9 Lessons and Carols for Godless People, which is the rationalist stroke secular celebrations of Christmas that you've set up, Robin. So let's talk about why and where the idea came from.
Well, the idea partly comes from, I suppose, first of all, I come from an arts background. I was always very interested in science. And then about 10 years ago, I got increasingly interested and I realised I'd missed out a lot of chances to understand more about the world, getting caught reading pointless books about art and biographies of former Hollywood legends. And so I got increasingly, my shows, my stand-up shows, had a greater amount of science in them, and I would, you know, have more stuff about Darwin in them and about various. So, I mean, it started actually, I suppose, from a sceptical point of view. I reread Carl Sagan's Demon-Haunted World, and from that, I then went backwards and read Cosmos again, which I hadn't read since I was about 14. So that then got me going, I must write a routine about Eratosthenes and how he discovered the circumference of the world through sticks and shadows and wells. Then that grew a little bit. Then I started a night called The School for Gifted Children, which was kind of a follow-up from a show I used to call The Book Club, where I'd read out from pieces of odd and strange literature with musical backing generally. And then I decided that rather than do something cynical and, haha, isn't this book rubbish, I thought, well, why not do a show that celebrates, even though celebrating is harder than being cynical and attacking, why not do a show that celebrates scientific thought, philosophical thought, amazing books, people like Richard Feynman and Carl Sagan. So that's really the starting point of Nine Lessons and Carols for Godless People. But what mainly caused it was I did a show last year called London Talking, presented by Connie Huck, which I was invited on to talk about, is Britain becoming more secular? And when I got there, the subject was changed to who's taking the Christ out of Christmas, which I wouldn't really bother debating because I think it was just, it's one of those stories which is full of just misinformation and lies. And I don't know if a lot of the journalists who print it know they're lying. I think sometimes they're just, we have a very, very lazy culture in journalism where people will just get a PR blurb through and they will write it up.
This is the sort of some local council banning Christmas. And
this is, yeah, you're not allowed to have a Christmas manger. They're not called Christmas trees. All churches are being burnt down by angry Saracens, etc. So I was on this show and there was Nick Ferrari and Vanessa Feltz and other people who I'd been told were going to be religious heavyweights. I ended up going slightly, well, I thought I'd gone mad when I got my moment, and I thought, I'm just going to have to grab this and not let anyone in, because first of all, I have to go through everything they've said, which is a lie and is entirely wrong. And I did feel like a lunatic in Hyde Park standing on a box on a Sunday morning. And then Stephen Green from Christian Voice, who were the organisation that were heavily involved in trying to get Jerry Springer, the opera band, and certainly, I think, through their work, helped get friends of mine death threats, etc. He sat there as I was saying that I had nothing against Christmas. I think a time for thought and reflection and celebration, and as long as your religion is a peaceful religion which does not attempt to enforce an ugly morality on individuals, then that's fine. He kept going, I think he does want Christmas banned. I think he does want Christmas banned. So a little bit into the year 2008, I thought, well, I would like to put on something that celebrates rationalism and science, and is, though it's not, I wouldn't want it just to be a night for atheists. I think the first couple of nights might be have a particularly atheist audience, but, you know, I would like to have liberal religious people in there, and I'd like to have any religious people in there who would want to listen. But I wanted to show that we could have fun, because I think atheism, quite a lot in the media, is people just like to think of Richard Dawkins as being this angry man shaking a stick at the sky, and I don't think he is. I mean, I think anyone who's read any of his books, his science books, but pre The God Delusion, they're very poetic, very beautiful books, very much like a lot of Carl Sagan's work. So I thought it would be, let's show the jolly side of atheists, that atheists are not Scrooge-like curmudgeons. In fact, a lot of time they have a far more enjoyable time, because they don't have to have the overbearing morality written by some bearded man 2,000 years ago.
You've already mentioned, but we should definitely reiterate that, you know, again, you're talking about most definitely a celebration of science and, I suppose, atheism.
I think predominantly science, because, sorry to pick you up on that, but just very briefly, I don't think the way of winning over religious people is merely by constantly pointing out that the books they use are preposterous, sure, however preposterous they are. I think the way, because I think Mark Twain, this will be a misquote, but Mark Twain said it's much easier to make a fool of someone than it is to point out that someone's been made a fool of. If you say to someone what you believe is ridiculous, then obviously we get a front and we get angry about it. So I think instead, if you start talking about the 400 billion approximately stars in our galaxy, that's immediately, you know, when you read something like that, especially for me from a non-scientific background, I just go, "What, Dad? This is big." And I can see why people would almost want religion, because religion is simple. Science, once you start about 400 billion in our galaxy, some people think our galaxy is the solar system. Some people think the solar system is the universe. There is much work to be done to prove how insignificant we are, how indifferent the universe is, and how in many ways that means we should embrace the life we have, this brief window of opportunity.
Well, what I was going to raise was, of course, despite what you said, that, you know, obviously this is not going to be particularly or solely an attack on Christianity, an attack on Christmas. Of course, some of the press has already suggested that that's going to be the case. You know, this is another bunch of liberals who, you know, who want to ban Christmas. They, you know, they wouldn't do this to any other religion, and, you know, you couldn't make it up. I really love the description, which I've read a couple of times. You're describing it as basically a variety version of the Royal Institute Christmas lectures, which I think is
I really want it to be. I want people almost to be punch drunk when they leave. They're going to have seen somewhere between 18 and 20 acts. They're going to, you know, some musical acts, some scientists, some comedians, all talking about things which they're very passionate about, and obviously singing about things they're passionate about. And so I'd like it to be this kind of taster sample. I did a couple of shows in Edinburgh at the Fringe Festival this year called Carl Sagan Is My God, Oh, and Richard Feynman Too. And what was really nice about that, I was worried it was going to be to a science audience. So everyone was going to go, well, we know that. Fortunately, it was mainly to, I think, a more arts-based audience. And since then, I have found out, I've been in various bookshops, and three is, in fact, I've been in more bookshops than that, but on three occasions, someone at the counter has said to me, oh, I've seen you on a thing. Someone came in the other day and bought a book by Richard Feynman and said they bought it because they saw a show about him and they'd seen the Edinburgh Fringe show. And that's part of, if I have my missionary zeal, is that people would leave these kind of shows and the other shows that I put on and other people put on and go to the bookshop. I must immediately purchase this book and find out a little bit more. Because that's how, I mean, I've really put on the kind of show that I would love to see. So it for me, it's a proper treat just to go. I'm working with comedians who are both friends and people who I also admire a great deal, and with scientists whose books I've read, and musicians who I think are wonderful as well.
And, you know, not only might you encourage people to learn something about theoretical science, but a lot of people might start taking up the bongos as well.
Well, Richard Feynman, I'm amazed at how few people know about Richard Feynman. Myself and a couple of friends are enormous Richard Feynman fans. There is on YouTube, if you put in Richard Feynman and bongos, the first thing that should come up is Richard Feynman playing the bongos very near the end of his life, but really banging it, because supposedly he was one of the only people who could do a 10 rhythm with one hand and 11 rhythm with the other. I don't even really know. I know roughly what that means. It's kind of slightly out of sequence rhythm. And he's there, this Nobel Prize winning physicist, singing a song about orange juice. In this caterwauling voice, and his joy Originally, the show, unfortunately, we couldn't get a good enough quality projection to start the show with this, was going to be Richard Feynman at the beginning of his Horizon documentary, where he says, I got a friend, and he's an artist, and he says something I don't agree with too well. He says, you know, Richard, when I look at a flower, I see the beauty. When you look at a flower, you pick it apart, you make it a dull thing. And you know what? I think that's kind of nutty. And I just love, and he then explains how science, rather than removing beauty, he said, I can see the beauty, maybe not in such a refined way as he sees the beauty. And then he goes down to a molecular level and why the flower is the colour it is, and he ends by saying science only adds, it doesn't subtract. And I think that to me is in the last half of my life, which I imagine I faced due to bad diet and also the average existence of a human male, I want to try and get that one tiny speck towards understanding something.
Do you envisage doing this, you know, repeating this? I mean, let's just talk about how, you know, it's been an absolutely massive success. I mean, all three nights, there's two nights at the Bloomsbury Theatre, a night at the Hammersmith Apollo, a much bigger venue, all three sold out extremely rapidly. I mean, did that surprise you?
Yeah, because I had no idea how it would sell. I originally just came on one night at the Bloomsbury. Everyone I asked immediately said yes, which was fantastic, and Richard Dawkins said yes very early on, which was great. And then I only put it up on a couple of sites. I think you've got a message board somewhere, and I think I put something up on yours and on a couple of other message boards, and then I found out it sold out. So we put on a second night. And then I spoke to a promoter, because Hammersmith is over 3,500 people, and they went, this is probably a ridiculous idea. And I thought, well, that's the perfect reason to do any form of idea, is with its ridiculousness. And so I was very pleased. Obviously, I can't deny there is an element that we have some big hitters from the comedy world and from the science world on there. But I think we sold out the first few thousand tickets, first 1,500 tickets at Hammersmith, without most people knowing even who was really on. So I hope to make it bigger and bigger and bigger. My plan is that next Christmas we will actually do 9 days of 9 lessons of carols with alternating bills, probably ending at Hammersmith. That's you know, I'd like to get people like Steve Jones, the geneticist who was unavailable, and various other people that I'd like to get. AC Grayling. I also asked Philip Pullman, and he wrote back a really charming email. And I'm really sorry, but I hate celebration. I'm such a curmudgeon. I'm always so miserable. Honestly, really good luck with it, but I'm a misery guts. And I thought that was great. I'd love to get Alan Moore there. You know, Alan Moore, the great comic book writer who I met a while back. And he, of course, has his individual deity, which is a small kind of sock puppet cat god. I've only really scraped the surface of the kind of people I like to get on. And I also hope that, because as you were talking earlier about some of the slights and, oh, you wouldn't do this to, you know, Islam or whatever, which anyone who wrote that, I tried to keep on top of who was writing these things. I would write back to them and go, first of all, when I use the term godless, I am referring, I have a Venn diagram, and it's a godless Venn diagram. It's all gods and then a subsection, mythical gods. But it turns out it's just one circle. That's it. All gods, mythical gods, there we are. So I said, if you want to be insulted, don't worry, we are insulting everyone. If you deem that to be an insult,
you're looking for an insult.
Yeah, if you want to be, you know, like Sebastian with arrows piercing your ribs, then you can be. But that's why I think also it's very important. I have already talked about doing a rational Ramadan, and I would like to do that. I realise, because apart from anything else, I think if we don't, it's not even standing up to religion. It's just saying here's an alternative. I would like to do throughout the year probably 4 a year, and I'm on tour unfortunately for a lot of this year, so actually it's quite a lot of organisation, but I will make sure that it happens during other religious festivals. But we must remember that the majority religion in this country by some way is various different forms of Christianity, and therefore obviously what the majority religion is will be the one we're more likely to pick on those festivals initially.
Robin, I think that's covered everything, so thanks very much.
Marvellous. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm talking to Darren Heyman, musician, now a solo musician, once of the band Hefner. Darren, why are you playing a gig to do with rationalism and secularism?
Well, I'm a friend of Robin Ince's, and Robin Ince is very persuasive and charming and can get people to do stuff for not much money. So he phoned a lot of us up and phoned me up and you know, he was polite. He said, do you believe in God before you ask me? So I don't. So that's why I'm doing it. But the event itself kind of made me think about it more. It's not like I'm a card carrying atheist, it's not like I have a little placard or a set of witty slogan t-shirts about it, but I saw no reason to not do it. I guess is the reason why I'm doing it. I saw no reason to not do a godless Christmas.
Mm-hmm. But you've done this sort of thing before?
Specifically atheist gigs at Christmas?
Not necessarily at Christmas, but particularly...
I've played with... I've done shows with Robin Ince where he has musicians and stand-up comedians, people like Stuart Lee and Josie Long, and also, together with that, he has people like myself, but also people like Ben Goldacre from the Bad Science column in The Guardian. So I'm kind of getting used to this idea of these mixture of things. I guess the common thread is maybe this slightly rationalist stance to things.
Mm-hmm.
But within that, we, you know, we are nothing alike.
So do you think, I mean, you think that's it's a good way of getting those sort of messages across and celebrate? I mean, Robin's very insistent that this is, it's a, you know, we're not supposed to be proselytising, it is a celebration of science and wonder in that sort of way.
I really like having Ben Goldacre around and Richard Dawkins. I'm looking forward to. I quite like that there is just a couple of guys up there that have got something serious to say. Certainly makes me feel more confident about the rubbish I'm going to do. So I like the idea that there's some really smart people up there that can do crosswords and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me feel good about the whole thing. Perhaps if it was just all frivolous,
yeah,
it might not work.
So what rubbish are you going to do tonight?
I'm going to do a song. I was trying to think of any of my songs that I could crowbar into an atheist Christmas theme without having to write one afresh, which I think is what most people are doing, just to tailor their existing material for it. And I thought that instead of singing a song about the Archangel Gabriel, I'm going to sing a song about everybody's favourite lead singer of Genesis, Peter Gabriel.
So yes, everybody's favourite out of all of them. So.
Yeah, out of all three.
That's great, Darren, thanks very much. I've been joined by Christina Martin, who is a stand-up comedian. So, Christina, why are you doing a gig for secularism and rationalism?
Well, I was doing a similar kind of gig with Robin at the end of last year about the abolition of blasphemy, which is where we crossed paths, and he asked me to do this. But prior to that, I'd been doing a lot of secular comedy, partly as an accident, because I had a one-line joke that got out of hand and became very offensive and kept me off television because it might offend Christians. So that sort of inspired me to keep mining that particular area, because it was obviously something that got a genuine reaction from audiences and that I found that I was really genuinely interested in. I find that you get the best jokes out of things that you're personally invested in and that and can be explored a bit more deeply than aren't men and women different, or you know, that thing with the bus, you know, it kind of just lends a bit more of an interesting level to the comedy and makes it more interesting for you to do.
How can you tell? I mean, if you know, you say you're doing that particular routine in a club, how can you tell?
You can tell the difference between a gut laugh and a kind of a genuine reaction that brings. That people physically move forward when they laugh, or people, their jaw drops with shock, and you can see from the stage the different reactions that seem much more real than my other material, which is sometimes I'll just dip into what I've seen on telly and that sort of gets a laugh, but it doesn't seem to affect people, it just seems to make them laugh. So I like to do both, really. I like to just, you know, do the silliness and also sometimes treat myself to making a really quite a terrible point and maybe annoying a few people. I've been chased out of venues before, so I can tell when it's genuine.
So, I mean, do you think comedy is a good way to get the message across?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because it's sort of sugaring the pill, isn't it? I don't think people react well to being preached at in that kind of telling you what to think way, and I don't really want to tell people what to think, it just happens to be what I think, but sometimes you can genuinely see people going, really? Because I'll quote something in the Bible in the context of a joke and they'll go home and think that's real, that's in the Bible. It's nice to sort of throw in a few things like that and have people start questioning perhaps why they might believe something based on false assumption or a twisted version of the truth that's got lost over many hundreds of years. Yeah, also just I don't really have anything against religion until it gets twisted by people. I think that's my only problem.
Yeah.
It's people's use of religion, particularly people like the Pope, you know, who use it for their own means and then twist words and twist little bits of theory to suit their ends and their social sort of control.
It's kind of his job.
Yeah, it's can't blame the man. He gets paid for it, wears nice hats. But yeah, but I've got really no axe to grind. I've got religious friends. I've got a friend who's a Jehovah's Witness. You wouldn't think that would work, but to be honest, you know, the example I'd take is my friend who's a Jehovah's Witness wouldn't accept a blood transfusion, but unlike the Church of England, she wouldn't try and make it so that no one,
yes,
you know, had
sure.
got a blood transfusion. Whereas they'll start harping on about how stem cell research is wrong. Well, you know, it's wrong for you, but for me, I'd personally like to die of a disease that might have a cure. No, that's the kind of thing. I don't got nothing against a religion where they go, I don't like that, but it's when they go, and neither should you. It's a great David Cross joke where, you know, he gets this Baptist woman to phone up a guy who's dying of cancer and going, he goes, oh, but I'd really like a cure, I'd really like to find a cure. And she goes, but it's what I believe, silly. You know, it just jars with me a little bit that someone who believes in something that they've never really been able to prove can impact my life that directly.
Christina, that's brilliant. Thanks very much. Well, I've been joined by Wayne Shepherd. So, Wayne, tell us what you're doing tonight.
I've got a character called Colin Watson, who is he's sort of like a one-man Beach Boys act, vaguely based on Brian Wilson, who I find extraordinarily talented and hilariously funny. So, quite an inspiration for me.
So, does he live in a sandpit?
Does he live in a sandpit? It's a good question. Not anymore, shall we say that? But yeah, if he'd given the choice, he probably would. Yeah.
So, is there? I mean, why did you agree to do this particular gig tonight?
Well, I think partly because Robin asked me.
That's what everybody said.
I've worked with him quite a lot, so yeah, regular appearer. What's the word for somebody who appears?
Regular attender.
Yeah.
Regular.
I don't sound like an audience member. Anyway, you know, I do these gigs quite a lot. I think mainly just because, you know, it fits the bill for me. You know, I wasn't brought up in a religious family. You know, which was very, very strange. I think for somebody sort of growing up in kind of normal society, not like everybody was insanely religious where I lived. But it was always a bit of a talking point. It was like, oh, you weren't christened. But my parents always, you know, thought it was really important that I should grow up and make my own decisions about it, about things, you know. So, and I think that's important for everybody. So, you know, I should think, I, you know, it's just one of those things that's in my bones, you know. And I think people should have the freedom to explore these issues at their own leisure and come to their own opinions. And not be attacked for believing what they do.
That's brilliant. Thanks very much, Wayne.
Thank you.
Well, I've been joined by an old friend of Little Atoms, Simon Singh. Hi, Simon.
Hello, how are you doing?
So, you're no stranger to this performing science on a stage thing. You've done a stage show yourself in the past. So what are you actually going to be doing tonight?
The show we did before, myself and Richard Wiseman, was the Soho, and that was, you know, an hour and a half of psychology and maths and probability and science and cosmology. It was a sort of an out and out attempt to turn a scientific lecture into something that's vaguely theatrical. Whereas today, I think we've got a much more theatrical show with musicians and comedians and some scientists and so on. So I think to some extent the science is going to be more straight down the line, because I'm nowhere going to try and compete with these real entertainers. But on the other hand, science itself isn't inherently entertaining. And that's why, you know, that's why we love it. So I'll probably focus on cosmology. In fact, I know I'll focus on cosmology because I've been rehearsing all afternoon. And yes, so a bit about the Big Bang and why we believe in it and why it's such a wonderful achievement that humans have at last understood where the universe came from and how it evolved from that Big Bang.
So, I mean, do you think this is a this is a good method for disseminating interest in science and secularism and the like.
I think for me, the bottom line for good methods are those that are self-financing. There's a huge amount of money for science communication, science engagement, and the money's there because it has to subsidise events and stuff that may not draw very many people. The fantastic thing about tonight is that Robin's got not just one full house, but three full houses,
yeah,
and one
yeah.
of them is at the biggest house imaginable. And so if you can create something that... That people just are desperate to get tickets for, that has to be fantastic. And you know, I'm not going to be able to explain, you know, cosmology as though it were a textbook or a university course, but hopefully people will say that's curious and interesting, and maybe they'll just surf the web, maybe they'll go to their library, but whatever happens, I think people will come away with a more positive view of cosmology. They'll have their curiosity sparked.
Does it surprise you that the three nights have been so successful? I mean, they're sold out in a matter of days, the tickets going on sale. Do you think that the interest is out there, just waiting to be tapped?
Yeah, 3 months in advance, prior to all the advertising. I think everybody's been taken aback by it. And I just think it shows that there's a population of people that are just interested in the universe around them and are willing to celebrate the fact that we've... You know, with our tiny brains on this tiny planet, we've been able to understand so much of the natural world.
That's great. Simon, thanks very much for speaking to me.
My pleasure.
I'm talking to another old friend of Little Atoms, Natalie Haynes. Hi, Natalie.
Hello.
So, what are you going to be doing tonight?
That's a good question. I haven't quite decided. I suspect... I was supposed to be doing
You've not
about,
got long.
I know. I was supposed to be doing 8 minutes, I think. But I suspect by the time I come on, quite late, it will be running late. So I think I'm going to have to cut. So I was going to do the MMR vaccine and a very ungenerous story about a radio interview I did a couple of years ago. And I think I might default to the latter. I think I'm not going to have time for both, but I might still change my mind between now and then. It depends how the show looks like it's going, and if I'm allowed up to watch backstage, then who knows, I'll try and judge the audience and pick from that.
So do you think this is a good way to disseminate the ideas of, you know, rationalism and scepticism and secularism and all that?
I think, in fairness to stand-up, it's always been a place where that happens. I mean, this is a higher profile gig, we've got bigger names involved.
Yeah.
Richard Dawkins, Simon Singh, Ben Goldacre. So people are making a big effort to kind of disseminate big ideas, and that's important. But to be fair to stand-ups, I mean, Robin is an excellent example.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Ince has been crapping on about important rationalist ideas for quite a long time now, and I think a bunch of us have, in a quiet, kind of small-scale kind of way. But this isn't a huge theatre. It's going to be full of like-minded, hopefully, people, or really, really angry people who come to mock us and shout. So it should all work quite well, I think.
So, yeah, I mean, you just said that there's, you know, a lot of stand-ups are doing this material, this sort of thing. People are bringing the ideas into their routines. So, obviously, there is there's an audience for it out there. So, bearing that in mind, I mean, were you surprised at how quickly all of these shows sold out?
I think I was, actually, yeah. I mean, the chance to see Richard Dawkins anywhere is exciting. I did an anti-war gig here a few years ago at the gig. Great, the war still went ahead. Who knew the proud comedy was so meek? But people came then to see Michael Moore, who was overdoing the Roundhouse at the time. Tickets were about £40, tickets for this were £15. And so that sold out in record speed. So I'm kind of accustomed to shows at the Bloomsbury being bigger than you expect them to be, I guess. And being easily the most minor person on the bill at any one time, going, yes, I'm in the sellout show. Is it you, Sonna? No, it's Richard Dawkins. I'm sorry. So, I think adding his name to the bill, who doesn't want to see somebody, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, you still want to see somebody who's created quite so much media attention close up. It's exciting. It's interesting seeing somebody who has that kind of charisma in print, in life, and seeing if they carry it over. Seeing, you know, people must go to lectures by him. I never have. This is the closest I'm going to get.
So, what do you think your stand-up routine is going to be like?
I think he's going to open with his second strongest material and close with his best joke overall. Yeah.
That's great, Natalie. Thanks very much.
You're so welcome.
So, I'm standing with Chris Addison, who most recently, I think people would probably know, for... Lab Rats.
That's right, I did that. I was responsible.
And before that, The Thick of It.
That's right. I wasn't responsible, but I did that.
And he's a stand-up comic.
Yes.
And why are you here?
Why am I here? Well, I'm here because I was asked by the wonderful Mr. Robin Ince if I could do it back in June or something. It was June that he had the idea for this. And it sounded like a really good thing to do. And for me, it's a strange thing because I'm a very late convert to atheism in my life. But not a late convert to the notion of rational thinking and reason and all of that. Those two things probably sound like they don't quite fit, but we can have that discussion some other time. It's too big to go into. But anyway, but I thought this would be a really interesting thing to do because it's a fantastic idea, the idea of a celebration of reason, and it's also fantastic. Isn't necessarily saying Yahoo sucks to religion, but is in fact celebrating the science and mankind and humanism, and I think that's a glorious thing to do at a time that's traditionally about goodwill to all men.
Indeed, I mean your act, your stand-up act is it's famously quite sort of cerebral anyway, and you sort of find humour in that sort of stuff. So there clearly is an audience out there for this sort of thing, isn't it? I mean, regardless of the fact that we're here on the brink of three massively sold out nights, there is an audience out there.
Definitely, and I think there's been a culture building in comedy for a little while of there's an appetite for jokes about subjects that aren't just sort of the broadly personal. For years, it's been about in the old days, music hall was mother-in-laws. And that was what people forget about mother-in-law jokes is that was an experience that everybody had. People when they were newly married lived with their mother-in-law. That's a thing. So that was that's why those jokes grew up. It's all about personal experience. And for so long, comedy's been about personal experience. And now it's more. It still is for the most part. But there is a growing realization that you can be funny about apparently dry, big subjects. And there are enough people who love those subjects, find it fascinating, love watching documentaries about it, reading books about those things, that have an appetite for those sorts of jokes. Plus, it must be said, although Robin's School for Gifted Children and the book club and my shows and all of the things that have been kind of pointed at as examples of there's smart ass thinking or scientific thinking in comedy, actually they're all about the jokes always come first in all of this. We've slightly painted ourselves into a corner in a way, in that people always say, oh, this is the clever stuff, but actually it's all jokes, it's still jokes, and we're no cleverer than anyone else, frankly. So, I think it's comedy for everybody, but just about a different subject. Gosh, that was long-winded, but we got there.
That was great. Thanks, Chris. So I'm talking to Tim Minchin, stand-up. So Tim, why are you here tonight? What are you planning on doing?
I haven't decided yet, actually. I'm a musician. A
couple of people have said that.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a musician, obviously, and there's probably about a third of my show is very relevant to a night like this. And so I've just got to do this beat poem, which is 9 minutes long. It's really sort of pretentious in form and quite pretentious in content, but it certainly resonates with this sort of crowd. And I've got another song about Christmas that's a sort of sentimental song about Christmas, which really suits this, but I'm not sure if I'm going to do it. Depends, because I'm on last, so I'm aware that everyone's going to be tired, so I don't want to try them too much, try their patience.
So I mean, you've got a particular interest in the field, secularism. I mean, is this why you're doing it as well?
Yeah, I don't know why. I'm not really a sort of member of any clubs. I guess I studied a bit of philosophy at uni, and I went to an Anglican school, and I have no memory of not being an unbeliever. I just always it never seduced me, and increasingly as I get older, I'm interested in the minutiae of it. You go through a stage of just going, oh, God doesn't exist. And then you go, yeah, all right, you can stop yelling that. I still struggle to keep religion out of my shows. I don't think it's necessarily great to bang on about it all the time. So I ration myself. So in my shows, I sort of go, it can't be more religion and skepticism and critical thinking in a kind of obvious way, can't be more than a third of the show. But you can sneak critical thinking into everything you do.
But I try not to bash God too much, but a lot of people would say I do it a lot.
Well, obviously most of the stand-ups that are on tonight do use that sort of material in their acts, so clearly there is obviously a audience out there for it, isn't
yeah.
there?
I think comedy is about pointing out why the world's mad, mm-hmm. I suppose. That might be because you're mad and everything seems mad through mad eyes. But there's no doubt that for those of us who are quite logically minded, of which many comedians are, because there's something quite mathematical about comedy. It's not uncreative, but there's something sort of that requires analysis or something. And so there's plenty of people who are interested in it, and it's something that causes us intellectual outrage, and nothing inspires comedians more than intellectual outrage, you know, the sort of affront to their brains. And also satire, it's our job as satirists to pull down those things we hold sacred. And I get emails every now and then going, it's not every now and then, a couple ever, that people going, bashing God isn't funny, man. It's been done, you know, from obviously people pretending they're not Christians. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's been done, but until we live in a world free of any of the negative side effects of religion, then it's absolutely a target for satirists. It's not only our choice, but our obligation to address it. You know,
that's brilliant.
And it's not just God. It's nonsense. It's you know what Francis Wayne called mumbo jumbo. You know, and that really interests me. And I'm not a huge comedy consumer, but I've noticed Dara does one of my jokes, which is obviously his joke. But is he performing tonight?
No, he's on Sunday.
Okay, I'll have to talk to him because I've got an alternative medicine. You know, that old, you know what they call alternative medicine that's been proved to work? Medicine, you know. It's that joke. It's part of one of the things I might do tonight. So, yeah, there's a lot of crossover, but it's nice finding like-minded people in your own industry, you know. In the music industry, stuff doesn't get discussed so much. So I've come to comedy quite recently, and it's quite a joy to find smart people.
That's a good point, really, because I think when musicians and politics, you know, people tend to be like a bit more dismissive of, why is he sort of spouting on about politics, you know. But
unless that's your shtick,
that's right.
They try to keep them, it's all about love and drugs,
But as you said yourself, comedy is, that's supposed to be what it's about, which is interesting as to why they, you know, there has been sort of criticism in the press of the idea of doing this show. They've missed that, as you said yourself, the idea of, you know, satire, that's your job, that is what you're supposed to be doing.
And reading something in the press saying that you shouldn't be doing a gig like this, that's exactly the kind of thing that all my... I spend a lot of time trying not to be outspoken about this stuff, because it's just... It does get boring, you know? It does get tedious amongst your own like-minded friends. I don't think this issue of secularism and this rise of religiosity in certain scary parts of the world and stuff is something we all need to bang on about all the time. But when the press writes something like, you shouldn't do a show like this near Christmas, I feel like screaming and going, what century are we in, you idiot? Why have you got a pen, let alone a computer? Get out of... I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying... I think religion is, apart from anything else, just miseducation. You shouldn't teach kids the wrong information, you know. So that's just one tiny thing. And yet I'm not telling people they shouldn't take their kids to church. They can do that. And yet we, who are just going, oh, it'd be nice to have a Christmas week, what else could we celebrate here in the absence of belief? And the press, oh, man, it's just, listen to us go. I bet it's
reasonably enough to do it.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to chill out on all this God stuff, but fuck, dude, you're not making it easy, you know.
Tim, that's brilliant. Thanks very much.
Pleasure. Nice to meet you.
Josie, I've been asking everybody earlier about why they did tonight, and everybody has said, because Robin asked me. So can you make something up? Ask you that question.
Can I say the same thing? Okay. Why did I do the show tonight?
Okay, so I'm talking to Josie Long, comedian. Hi, Josie. Thanks for speaking to me.
Hello.
So, why did you choose to do this this wonderful benefit for secularism and atheism, etc. tonight?
Because I thought it was a really exciting prospect of a gig to get to do this. Like, genuinely, it's exciting for someone like me to think that there could be something that was such a, like, cavalcade of people who shared the same sort of views as me and did so in a positive, friendly, humane manner.
That's brilliant.
Thanks.
So, I mean, do you think, again, this is what I've asked everybody, do you think this is a, you know, comedy is a good format for disseminating these sort of ideas?
Yeah, although I think we were probably preaching to the converted tonight. And
this
so,
is true.
But then that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Indeed.
I mean, how nice for everyone to get to.
This is what my radio show has been doing for the past 3 years. It's
exactly. Like, sometimes everyone needs reassurance, and sometimes people want to go back to the team clubhouse and talk about the things that only people who are on the team care about. But I also think comedians, I think they can obviously be really important in terms of saying things. Oh,
beeping. What's the beeping?
Uh-oh, there's an announcement. Theatre's closed. Uh-oh, we're in trouble. We're in trouble now.
So we can go to the outer foyer?
Yeah, but what? We should probably stay here for a minute because we did tell the boss of the theatre.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, it's quite well established that comedians get to kind of say things that test boundaries, and comedians are historically very kind of, I don't know, cool satirists, you know. So, yeah, I think it is a good medium. But I also like the fact that this isn't, strictly speaking, like gag comedy as a night. It's like a variety spectacular. And it's nice. I mean, it's nice to have something that's almost like a church service or something.
Okay, so, Josie, thank you very much.
Oh, cheers. Thank you. Thanks for having me.